From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Alan Young. 82 days. That's how much time Mayor Daryl Steinberg has in his final term serving the city of Sacramento. On December 10th, he will turn over leadership to one of the two candidates currently running for mayor, epidemiologist Dr. Flo Cofer or State Assembly Member Kevin McCarty. Mayor Steinberg was elected in 2016 and over the course of two terms has weathered unprecedented challenges, including the pandemic. Steinberg delivered his final State of the City address this morning, an annual speech that is typically an outlook for the year. But this year saw a shift in timing and in tone. Today, we're going to unpack the speech and look back with Mayor Steinberg on his last 8 years. He joins us today in the studio. Mayor Steinberg, thank you for coming in.
Hey, thank you for having me, Alan.
The State of the City is typically an enthusiastic speech to get people excited for the upcoming year. I want to start by asking about the timing. Why hold the speech when you just have 3 months left in office?
Well, I thought that it was an opportunity to reflect not just on 2024, but to reflect on the last 8 years, but with a focus on lessons learned and how that will benefit the future of Sacramento. And by the way, when I say 82 days, I also teased that the work is not done because we have some major initiatives in the downtown that we're working very, very hard on that I hope before the end of my 82 days and my term that we're going to make some big announcements that if they come through, I think would rival Aggie Square where we gave the speech today. So I've given this speech now versions of it over the course of 8 years. And sometimes a tone or a mood or a moment strikes you. And for me, I wanted to talk about lessons learned and point to the future.
So let's get into lessons learned, and let's also talk about Aggie Square in Sacramento's Oak Park neighborhood, an area that has been applauded for economic development and also criticized for gentrification. Aggie Square is a billion-dollar development that plans to be a hub of innovation for students, startups, and local residents. It was the backdrop and really the symbol of your speech today. I'd like to talk about the bigger story of doing large-scale economic development projects in lower-income areas. Aggie Square secured a $50 million community benefits partnership agreement, which provides things like affordable housing and job training for local residents, folks that live nearby. We're still awaiting an ordinance that would make this arrangement mandatory for all major development projects that use public money. When we think about what it takes to develop the economies of our underserved neighborhood, how critical are these agreements to help out the surrounding community, and why hasn't the city approved an ordinance to do just that?
Well, the community benefits agreement was groundbreaking because it answered the fundamental question about investing in traditionally disadvantaged low-income neighborhoods. Can you uplift the economic future of every part of our city without pricing people out and without displacing people? And of course, we know if it's not done right, that even creating jobs and centers of economic energy and innovation can lead to high housing prices, and the people who have lived in these neighborhoods for generations then may not afford it. We did it just the opposite with Aggie Square. We were intentional, and it was not easy. There were a couple lawsuits, and the journey was a learning experience for all of us. But in the end, we came close to having it all. Because it's not only a multi-billion dollar investment in a traditionally underserved and forgotten part of our city, Stockton Boulevard, not just Oak Park, but Tahoe Park and the Med Center neighborhoods, but we fashioned this agreement that says we're going to put real money into helping the people living there with rent issues, with down payments to buy new homes for home repairs, and 25% of all the jobs, high-wage jobs, have to go to people living in the surrounding neighborhoods. And so you ask, is this a model for other such projects throughout the city? It is. And we will pass, before I leave, a citywide community benefit partnership ordinance. But I will say that you don't want to do one size fits all, because for every project, for every opportunity, there may be a different set of community benefits that need to be negotiated by neighborhood. And so what we will do is establish the foundation and the platform for making sure that anytime there's big investments, especially in an underserved part of the city, that the community itself comes first.
And you're committed to doing this in the next 82
days? Yes.
Let's talk about the other areas that have historically seen a lack of investment. For example, Del Paso Heights and North Sacramento and Meadowview and South Sacramento. You mentioned Measure U in your speech today. Has that sales tax extension worked out the way that you envisioned it to lift up those neighborhoods? And what else needs to be done? What is your hope for where this goes?
So my honest answer is that it has not lived up to everything that I originally intended it to be. And the reasons are complicated, but let me see if I can distill this for a moment. Number one, the city, both in the way it is set up, its form of government, but also its tradition, has been primarily a service provider. Public safety, police and fire, we take care of the parks, we provide some youth programs, obviously we provide the utilities, picking up the garbage, providing the water, etc. The great challenge and opportunity in a growing city like Sacramento is whether or not we are willing to redefine what is a core priority for a growing city. And I've maintained for my 8 years that the city must find the room to prioritize inclusive economic development, investing in everything from safer streets and infrastructure to make more Aggie Squares possible. To even talk today about shade and trees, where in some parts of the city, their tree canopy is virtually non-existent. And so the city has struggled with this. Measure U was my effort to say, okay, let's create another $70 million a year to do that. But it was a general tax, went into the city's general fund. And as the cost of city government increases, a lot of that money has been eaten up by what it takes to provide the basic services. But that's not the
end. Including pensions, right?
Including pensions, yes. That's not the end of the story, though, because what I advocated for today is that the city now maybe go about this a little bit differently, that the city takes some percentage of every bit of future growth, every bit of future growth when we increase revenue, and instead of putting it back into the general fund, put it into an economic development and infrastructure fund so that we can fund more safe streets to deal with the pedestrian and bikeway safety issues in our communities so that we can prime the pump for more Aggie Squares.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg, who just delivered his final State of the City address this morning. When you took office, you called homelessness your signature opportunity, and you've been very clear, even today in your speech, that you want to be judged on this issue. According to the point-in-time count, unsheltered homelessness nearly doubled in the county from the year you really got started in office, 2017, to this year. What would you say to listeners who look at that fact and say, yes, I agree with the mayor that poverty is a systemic issue, but you've asked to be judged on how the city responds to this systemic issue? When we consider the positive and the negative, what's a fair way to judge your efforts on homelessness?
Well, your question respectfully only told part of the story, because yes, homelessness increased during my first years as mayor, as it did in every other part of the state and many parts of the country. Now, I said in the speech today that I think part of my challenge was I created a high expectation when I campaigned. I said I didn't promise to end homelessness, but I think I may have given that impression. And so I talked about lessons of leadership. Do you stretch and reach for big goals? Because in doing so, if you don't actually meet the expectation, you come in for a lot of criticism, as I have on this issue. On the other hand, if you don't stretch, then you don't get nearly as far as you would have gotten if you had just said, well, we're going to do business as usual. So the part of the question that was missing was that while homelessness did go up between 2022 and 2024, unsheltered homelessness went down 41% in the city and county of Sacramento, while over the same period of time, homelessness went up 8% in the rest of the state. The single largest reduction of any major metropolitan area in the state and one of the largest reductions in the country.
Well, we should, I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. we should note, Mr. Mayor, that those point in time numbers have been contested. Lowe's and Fish's, which serves unhoused people every day, claim to have noticed an increase in their services and an increase in the meals that they serve over the past 2 years.
I love Lowe's and Fish's and all the activists, but guess what? Nobody complained or called into question the integrity of the numbers when they went up. When they go down 41%, oh, there's all kinds of questions. And here's why they're contesting, because homelessness is still a problem. There's no question there are still people suffering. But we've laid a foundation, and that's my point, Alan. No one gets to finish the task, but by creating a high expectation and by leaning in the way that I did, and not just me, the way the city leaned in, not a mental health or substance abuse agency, by the way, is the city of Sacramento, by going from less than 100 beds to 1,300 a night, by creating a new city department to be out on the streets intervening with people, by partnering with our county like never before, we had the single largest reduction of any city or county in the state. That's a foundation to build upon. So I'm holding my head high, even though we didn't solve it. And I've taken the barbs from the business folks and neighborhoods to say, please end this. From the activists who say you should never move somebody from an encampment unless you have housing for everyone. This is not perfect, but we're helping more people. The city is cleaner and safer. By the way, crime down 13.6%.
Well, let's get into moving people around, because you've said that the city has an obligation to provide shelter, housing, and social services to people experiencing homelessness, and crucially, that people have an obligation to accept those services. In the city, our shelters are way oversubscribed. As you know, there's typically 2,500 people on a wait list for 1,300 shelter beds. My question is, as the city ramps up and becomes more proactive in the clearing of these encampments, are we just uprooting people to spread them elsewhere in the streets?
Ultimately, moving people is not a solution, even though we cannot tolerate as a city allowing tent encampments to grow and to proliferate, because it's not healthy and safe for the people, and it's not healthy and safe for our surrounding communities. And, not but, at the same time, we need to continue to be aggressive in increasing capacity, getting more. We talked to the county on Tuesday in public session about getting more people with severe mental health and substance abuse problems into the wraparound treatment model that was the subject of my Proposition 63, the Mental Health Millionaires Tax that I authored back in 2004, now Proposition 1. We have more work to do to build more bed capacity and to get more people into services. I guess where I've come to as a mayor is that while the ideal would be a one-to-one, one bed for every person or else you don't do anything, that's frankly unrealistic. It's not realistic. And so you accept the imperfection and you continue to strive to create more opportunity and capacity for people to get help. I agree with the critics who say that in the end, if you don't provide the services voluntarily first or involuntarily as necessary, that moving people from one corner to another is not right, and it's ultimately going to be a false promise to the people, the constituents who think that somehow this is going to get better. It has to be both.
There was some legacy chat today, and we hope to have you on for an exit interview in a few months. But I want to know, when you look back on the last 8 years, what is one thing that you know you got right and one thing that you didn't?
I think we got Aggie Square right. And I think what we really got right is to ask and begin answering the question about whether or not a modern growing city has to be about more than just providing the basic services, whether you invest in workforce, in youth, in inclusive economic development, in our commercial corridors. I think we've changed the conversation and begun changing the arc of the city in extraordinary times. I think I got that right. What didn't I get right? I'm sure a lot. I think that my fundamental challenge in this job was I was gone from the city for 18 years between my tenure in the legislature and leading the state Senate to coming back to City Hall. And I think I came in with some expectations and a push that maybe was not completely consonant with the pace of change, especially local government. And so I advise my successors to both be ambitious and aspirational, and at the same time maybe level set the expectations in a way that allows them to continue to build confidence as their mayorship grows and as the years go by. But I said in the speech today, I've only known one way. And the one way is to be aspirational and to set a vision and then to work as hard and get as far as you possibly can. It certainly worked great at the state level for me as I rose and accomplished a lot. And it was a little bit more painful at the local level, although I think the end result is that we have laid the foundation for the right kind of change in this city. While, by the way, and I said it earlier, crime's gone down. And some of the basics which people are rightfully concerned about, crime, the unemployment rate, we're trending now in all the right directions.
Well, let's talk about where we trend. You endorsed Assemblymember McCarty this month, right?
Yes, I did.
We didn't see a press release or any posts on social media. If McCarty is your chosen successor, why quietly endorse him?
Well, I had made a contribution to him in March and it got reported, and then I did formally endorse him last month. Look, I have faith in the people to make the right choice. I endorsed Assemblymember McCarty because I've known him for years, been a longtime friend, and I think he has a great record of accomplishment and knowing how the system works and how to get the job done. And I think Dr. Cofer is a fine leader as well. I give her credit for stepping up and being willing to run for mayor of Sacramento, and she has her own vision. I think that my concern is I think the politics of this city are what I call center left, and that whoever is the next mayor needs to have a strong belief system, strong set of values and agenda, but also needs to recognize that it's about working under this system, especially with the city manager, with eight other council members. The mayor only gets one vote. I don't know if a lot of people know that. Has no real executive authority. And so regardless of what your politics are, I think you have to be willing and really willing to try to find the center, even if it's center left.
Well, both candidates are center left. As you mentioned, Dr. Cofer, and you have said kind and supportive things about each other. She's also been a vocal critic of yours.
Yes.
On handling of homelessness and public funding for underserved communities. Where's an area where that you and Dr. Flo don't see eye to eye? What are your concerns?
I think that the reason I endorsed Assemblymember McCarty is because I think it takes some actual practical experience around putting together coalitions and votes to move a progressive agenda. And I'm not saying that Dr. Cofer is not capable of that. She's eminently intelligent and qualified. But she and I have disagreed on some things. And I guess if I would say anything that sort of reflected on those disputes, there's a difference between being an outspoken activist, which we need, and she's played that role very, very well. There's a difference between that and actually governing and what it takes to put together the votes to actually see your vision through. And so, again, whoever wins the next mayor's office, I said today, whoever becomes the next mayor, I will both be out of their way, and I'll do anything I can to help either of them as they take the reins and try to move this city in a continued positive direction.
Just our last 10 seconds, I know you haven't announced your next job. We'll have you back here if, you know, the AG's race opens up and you pursue that. But just in the last 10 seconds, what do you look forward to after leaving City Hall that isn't work-related? What's one thing?
Well, I'm a competitive tennis player, and I love the game, and I hope to go to the Australian Open with my wife in January. I want to take just a little time for reflection, but I'm not done yet. And service, by the way, does not have to be a title. It does not have to be a particular role. It just comes from the heart. It's a lifetime commitment. And for me, this is a lifetime commitment.
Mayor Steinberg, it's been great to talk to you.
Always. Thank you so much, Alan.
Daryl Steinberg is the mayor of Sacramento. We've been unpacking his final State of the City address, which the mayor delivered this morning at Aggie Square in Oak Park. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Alan Young.